But James chapter 4, verses 13 to 17. That is what we read there. Come now, you who say, today or tomorrow we'll go to such and such a city, spend a year there, buy and sell and make a profit. Whereas you do not know what will happen tomorrow. For what is your life? It is even a vapor that appears for a little time, then vanishes away. Instead, you ought to say, if the Lord wills, we shall live and do this or that. But now you boast in your arrogance. All such boasting is evil. Therefore, to him who knows to do good and does not do it, to him it is sin. So that's what we're going to be looking at tonight. Now, that part of James there, as we look at this idea of boasting about the future, really does flow out from where we've been for the last 2 weeks in James in particular. 2 weeks ago, we were looking at the need that we have to ask God for wisdom. We saw all the various sorts of wisdom from the world off the top of my head. I was talking about the things I looked at on Google, Money Cruncher, Hello, My Name is Blog, these really important places that provide wisdom for our day-to-day lives. But we see all these ideas, we see articles released that help us to be wise, but they're all contradicting wisdom, whereas in God's word, we see one reliable, consistent source of wisdom. And we saw that we do need wisdom. So why would we look elsewhere than God and God's word for that wisdom? And in doing that, it's not something we waste our effort doing, because God tells us in the start of James that anyone who asks for wisdom from him, God gives it. God gives that wisdom to them. This was made really, really clear for us. And this wisdom was made in contrast to the so-called wisdom which we find generated in the world around us. This so-called wisdom which is continually self-serving, even if it has a mask on that says it's not self-serving. Then last week we took the time to see where our pride lands us. When we saw the effects of pride, it wasn't pretty. Pride, the self-indulgent attitude that we are so tempted to adopt, leads us into conflict, it leads us to divisions, it leads us to war. And it does this because our pride does not allow us to compromise. Our pride insists on being right all the time. But James tells us that there's an alternative to that, and that alternative is humility. Humility before God and humility before the people around us as a result of being humble to God. Only that humility in acknowledging our need for God all the time can help us to curb those prideful tendencies, because it's God who helps us in this. Nothing else could ever help with our pride than us asking God to allow us to be humble. So what we have before us tonight, this idea about boasting about the future, it builds on what we've seen before, going back to chapter 3, verse 13. And while it's a short part of God's word we just read tonight, it's not long at all, only a few verses there. What we read there is the practical application of that wisdom, a practical application of those bits of wisdom we've learned in everyday life. It makes sense, doesn't it? In the Bible, we read that everything that we have has been given to us by God. God is described poetically in the Psalms as being the God who owns the cattle on a thousand hills. All the beasts of the field belong to him. All the birds of the air, all the creatures of the sea, they all belong to God. Everything on the face of the earth belongs to God. What we have, even the possessions we have ourselves, ultimately they too belong to God, because God is one who created everything, who holds everything together. It's all his. But where we fall into struggles with that is that we are the ones looking after, maybe we consider ourselves stewards of what God has granted us with for a little while. And if we're the stewards of what God's granted us with, is it not wise? Is it not sensible for us to make plans for how to manage those things that God has given us? We all make plans. I think we all look to the future. I think we all have hopes of things that we would like to achieve in life, no matter what stage of life we might be at. Though I don't think it's too far out of the question to see how in some way, shape or form we might fit in to what we read here in James chapter 4, verse 13. Come now, you who say, today or tomorrow, we'll go to such and such a city, spend a year there, buy and sell and make a profit. It's not really an uncommon scenario, is it? Maybe we're not looking at trading, but we make plans for what we're going to do with our futures. When we're presented with opportunities to solidify our position, to look after ourselves better, to look after our families better, we do that and we try to make the most of those opportunities and we make plans. We consider how we're going to maximise these opportunities that we have, these chances to better ourselves, and how we're going to use them to set ourselves up well. And that sounds reasonable. But James seems to have a problem with it. It is a problem with it, though, that the plans that we make just don't work out. When I started off working for a church on the Sunshine Coast, I started there in 2011. So it's about 9 years ago this month that I filled out a 10-year plan where I want to be in the future. And each year I had to fill out in incredible detail what would I be doing in 1 year, each quarter of that year. Outline where you'll be, what you'll be doing. For the second year, outline what you'll be doing every 3 months of that year. Kept going through to the 10-year mark. And then there was vaguer pictures for what you'd like to do in 15 or 20 years. Now, a year into that plan, it looked entirely different. I hadn't met Anna at that point in time when I wrote that plan up. And what I thought would happen as a single guy back then, 9 years ago, turns out to be super, super different than what actually happened. I certainly didn't think that I'd be a pastor. I certainly didn't think that I would have spent 2 years in Canberra. At the time, I thought Canberra was a terrible idea. It's cold, it's ugly, it's not a good place. But having lived there for 2 years, it's beautiful. But it certainly wasn't in the 10-year plan that this would be the case. I think a lot of us have been in similar situations. We plan ahead. When we get to school, particularly towards the end of school, what are we going to do with our future? What will we do after school? We consider what's happening next. What's going to happen when we're in the young adult stage? We consider what's happening next. We start planning for families. We start planning for retirement. There's always that next stage of where we want to be. Maybe things don't always work out the way we'd like them to, though. Maybe it's okay, though, to do this. Is it okay for us to plan for what's next and try to set ourselves up to make the most of those opportunities? See, we are planners, aren't we? We think ahead, we hope, we dream, we aspire to have different things. And it's to people like us who plan ahead that James writes this. We fit the bill of verse 13 a lot of the time. But in verse 14, James has this to say. Whereas you do not know what will happen tomorrow, for what is your life? It is even a vapor that appears for a little time and then vanishes away. James is reminded of this in chapter 1. We are like the flowers of the field. The beauty is there and then it's gone. It quickly fades. James is reminded of this a few times. And it's not just James who says this sort of thing to us in the Bible, though. In the book of Ecclesiastes, which is a wisdom book, probably written by Solomon. So because the preacher, the son of David, king in Jerusalem, it was probably Solomon who wrote this. He says right at the start of this book about wisdom, vanity of vanities, says the preacher, vanities of vanities, all is vanity. And he goes on to there, from there to say this. What profit has a man from all his labour in which he toils under the sun? One generation passes away and another generation comes, but the earth abides forever. The sun also rises and the sun goes down and hastens to the place where it arose. The wind goes south and turns around to the north. The wind whirls continually and comes again on its circuit. The point being made there is very similar to the one that James is making in chapter 4, is that we simply do not last. not in the way in which the way we go about making plans would indicate. There's no certainty to how long we're going to be here for. We don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. Just because we don't know what's happening tomorrow, that James says, don't make these plans. Even the world around us, which Paul tells us, it's not going to be here forever as it is. It's going to be renewed by God. It's going to be restored. There'll be a new heaven and a new earth. Even that's going to far outlast us. But the one who made the earth, the one who made us, the one who is God, he lasts forever. But we make plans for us, don't we? I think that's what James is talking about tonight. It's not the issue with making plans. It's not so much as having plans that's a problem or thinking ahead in how to wisely manage what God has given us. But it's so often our plans revolve around us. Those plans make us the center of the universe. For the time that we're here on earth, so often our pride and our ego tends to be just the significant driver behind why we do what we do. And it makes us do not what's good for the people around us, not what's good for God a lot of the time, but just what we think is good for ourselves in our greed. We make it about comfort, convenience, wealth, happiness, whatever else it might be. And none of those things is bad in and of itself. But if they're just being chased by us to satisfy our present desires, then we're not really living in the way that God intended for us to be living. The truth that is undeniably presented in the Bible is that we, as we are now, do not last forever. We just don't. If we have faith in God, though, this leads us to a position of hopefulness. For some, when we hear this truth that we will not last forever, we fall into a type of thinking called existentialism, which I still don't really understand fully. But the basic existential way of thinking is, if I'm not going to be around forever, what's the point? Why bother? Is that where James is taking us to tonight? His reminders a few times we don't last forever. Ecclesiastes, another book in the Bible, tells us we don't last forever. Is it just to grind us into the ground, to lead us to a point of going, why bother? Why try? What's the point? Well, James isn't leading us down that path. He's leading us towards doing things wisely. He's leading us towards living wisely and doing things the right way. Again, it's the pride, it's the egocentrism. It's about making us the center of everything in that verse 13 sort of planning that James has an issue with. James doesn't want us there anymore. He wants us living humbly before God. He doesn't want us to, even in what seems like an everyday normal thing to do, to make plans that are entirely self-indulgent, that are just about what we want for ourselves. He is not picking apart making plans because he's bored. He's targeted this because this is another incredibly practical way that we can show humility before God. Not just being humble because we made a mistake and retrospectively being humble before God, but being humble before God with everything that God might have in store for us in the future. This is practical humility for every part of our lives. Again, we all aspire for things in the future. But rather than have people say, I'm going to go over there, I'm going to make a profit, and I'll be there for this amount of time, and at the end of it, I'll be so much better off, which is all about us, James says that if we are truly humble, then we will say that we are committing all our plans to God. Instead, you ought to say, if the Lord wills, we shall live and do this or that. That right there is a difference in attitude, if the Lord wills. Because no longer are we the center of that sentence. God is. God's plans. And again, think of his character. What we know of him, what we've sung about him tonight. He is worth making the center of every plan that we might consider for the future and place it entirely in his hands. This is the right attitude for us to have. In some ways, it might seem like a small thing, just those words, if the Lord wills. It may sound at first reading like an easy thing. They're all very easy words to say, if the Lord wills. They're all one syllable. But it's not about just saying it. It's not about just having these magic words which are a way to fit our own plans in there and pretend that we're being humble before God. If we are actually serious about what James says, these aren't magical words we tack on at the end to go and do whatever we want to do. These are words that say, God, we're trusting you with everything in our lives in the future. We're trusting you with whatever might come. We are asking that you would lead the way. We are asking that we would do what you would have us do rather than what I would have myself do anymore. These are words of deep humility. They're words that say we know that the only things that we can do that are worthwhile and good and lasting are the things that God allows for us to do. It says we do not want to be the ones calling the shots and running the show of our own lives anymore. This is a humble expression of our recognition of who God is in every part of our lives, no matter what might come. That can sound scary, but in Psalm 23, we read that he is the one who leads his children like sheep beside the still waters and into the green pastures. He provides everything that we need. He is a shepherd who protects those who are in his flock. And we are in his flock if we have faith in him. It's not easy, though, to give control over, is it? It's not easy to just trust that God would work things for his glory. Particularly when things maybe start to feel as if they're going a bit pear-shaped. I mean, can we take a bit of control back now, God? That's our attitude sometimes. It's not an easy thing to do. But when we look to Jesus, we can see an encouragement and a wonderful example of this happening. Jesus, who is God in flesh, gives us the wonderful example of how to put this into practice. It might sound like just looking at Jesus is a basic Sunday school cop-out Christian answer, but I think this has significant depth to it. If we go to the book of Matthew, in chapter 6, verse 39, Jesus just shared the Last Supper with his disciples. He shared that meal in the upstairs room. He's gone to the Garden of Gethsemane. He knows that Judas is about to betray him into the hands of the Roman soldiers. He knows that he is about to die the most horrific death imaginable. And in that garden, he prays this. O my Father, if it is possible, let this cup pass from me. Nevertheless, not as I will, but as you will. Jesus knew that the road ahead was one that would be full of anguish. The road ahead was going to be one full of grief. The road ahead was one full of suffering. Some people think the end of that road was nothing more than a cruel, hard cross that Jesus died on. But that wasn't the end of the road, was it? 3 days after death, Jesus was raised back to life. And he is seated at God's right hand in heaven, where he tells us he is preparing a place for us to join him if we have faith in him. When we say, when we are planning for our future, that Lord willing we would do X, Y, or Z, this is a huge thing for us to say. To say, Lord willing, we will do this. Lord willing, we will place ourselves in your control. God, we will do everything that you have in store for us. It may not be the most comfortable journey. But while the journey may not be comfortable, because of what was accomplished when Jesus was obedient to the Father's will, we have spiritual safety and security through that. We have eternal safety guaranteed for us at the end of that road, which is a joy well worth holding on to despite whatever pain we might suffer along the way. To make our lives just about the ability to turn a profit, to boast about our future like this without considering God in the picture, this is wrong. James tells us in verse 17 of chapter 4 that this is sin. If we've heard what we've heard tonight and we say, no, I'm still going to do it my way, James says, this is sin. If we boast about our futures, what we can accomplish for ourselves, and if we don't depend on him, it is evil, it is unwise, it is foolish, it is sinful, it's fraught with destruction. When we hear God's word, when we read God's word, we read of the goodness and greatness of God, and we've read about that all term, last term, term before that, and the 8 years that the Kalangia Bible Talks have been going for. We know that God provides wisdom. We know that God changes the lives of those who have faith in him in ways that we could never fully comprehend. And he keeps on working in those of us who have faith in him. So knowing that, knowing what we know of God, knowing what James tells us about making plans for our future, will we ignore God in that and fall into sin? Or will we do what James tells us to live, as scary and confronting as that might be, and live according to God's will? After all, he is the one who knows the beginning from the end. I'm pretty sure his will is worth living by. We may have doubts along the way. It may not be comfortable, but we should all remember who God is, what God has done, and those promises he has given us to give us confidence that if we say truly and humbly that today or tomorrow we will do X, Y, or Z if the Lord wills, that is the only right thing we can do.